through this week. Call unto me, and I will answer you, or I will answer thee, King James. Call unto me, and I will answer thee. This is our opportunity to bring to the Lord whatever is on our hearts, whatever might be troubling us, whatever might still be we might be struggling with, whether it's in spiritual things or physical things, or making payments for our rent or making whatever. This is a week for us to draw close to Him. I don't have anything real profound to give you this week. I have felt led to certain scriptures and certain ideas. And yet I think that what I really would like to see is just that we are open to the work of the Holy Spirit in our lives. And we have these altars here before us, and I know that not everyone is accustomed to being in a church with an altar. But here the altar represents, like that last song sang, kneeling at the feet of Jesus. And so we have these altars here throughout the chapels. And in Wooten Hall, we have also altars there. Those altars are there for anyone who wants to just take some time and kneel at the feet of Jesus, to talk to Him. Excuse me. To talk to Him, to let Him speak to us. And so in the Church of the Nazarene, we say the altars are always open. There's no closed sign on the altar. The feet of Jesus is always a good place to go. And you are welcome to come and pray at these altars at any time during the service. If in the music you feel God really speaking to you and you want to just spend some time with Him, you can actually come and kneel at the feet of Jesus right here. Or during the message, if God really starts to tug at your heart and say, I want to spend some time with you, that's the time to respond. Whenever you understand the Lord is speaking to you, that's the time to talk to Him. So this week, it's our opportunity to call on the Lord, invite Him to be with us in all parts of our lives. Call unto me, and I will answer thee. God is an honorable King, pure, faithful. He's like a wonderful father, isn't he? Who says to his children, I'll provide for your entire well-being. I will provide for all of the family. I will provide for all of creation. And so God did that at the very beginning. If we go to Genesis, He created what we have. He created the heavens and the earth. He's a glorious God, from everlasting, eternal God. And yet, He, in order to share His glory, He created. He created. And as we read through some of Genesis, we understand that God created in order to share His creation. And so the pinnacle of His creation was this creation of humanity. Just by simply speaking, He brought things into being. By simply speaking. That's the glory of God. The honor of God is that He is so glorious. He can just speak and things take place. And then at the end of the creation chapter, in chapter 1. When you get to Genesis chapter 2, it says, God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. He rested after He pronounced His creation good. And so that's the way things began. This wonderful, honorable God, this glorious Father of all, and he created, and he said, it's good. And at the pinnacle of his creation, there we are, he crowned Adam and Eve with honor and glory. In the Garden of Eden, I want you to imagine this. It takes some imagination. Imagine the country you come from has a really good leader, an honorable, a godly type leader. Whether that's a king or a chief, a president, or what's the other one? Prime minister. Whoever's at the top of your country, imagine that that person is very honorable, very good, very righteous person, and that leader comes to you and says, hey, I want you to come and rule with me. I want you to come and be at my side all the time. I want you to have authority over the country. Okay, that's a pretty big imagination. First of all, to think that our leaders are all honorable. But can you imagine how you would feel if that leader comes to you and says, I've seen you, I've looked at you, and I want you to come beside me. The honor, whatever kind of honor and glory from that country leader falls onto you, doesn't it? How would you feel? I would feel pretty good. I would feel pretty good. Come and rule this country with me. All of China. Will you come and rule all of China with me? All of, where else are we at? Korea. I see the Koreans back here. All of Myanmar. All of India. Gandhi comes and says, Nehemiah, I need you. Nehemiah, I need you right at my side. Can you imagine what that feels like? Well, that's where Adam and Eve were. They experienced the glory of God because he made them joint rulers with him. As God's children, they lived under the honor of God's name, not their own name. Their identity was in their connection to God. And they were free just to walk, talk with God, naked, without any shame. But that was the closeness of relationship, and that was the type of honor that God had given them. There was no shame in that. I could say, now imagine, you know, going to that king of your country without any clothes, but that, you know, that doesn't work in our settings these days. But for them, they were naked. They were not clothed. And yet they had no shame in that because they're covered by the glory and the honor of God. That's who they are. They're part of his creation and his children. So they walked naked and unashamed. Didn't last long. It didn't last long. And so we see Adam and oil? I don't know what that was. That was my brain making a quick loop, and I don't know. Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve. Seeking honor for themselves rather than just living in the honor that God had given them. Do you understand that? Satan came to them and says, hey, there's another way to do this. You don't have to live by the laws that God gave. There's another way to do this. If you do this, eat this fruit, you'll have the honor all by yourself. You'll be just like God. You will know good and evil. And you don't have to think that what God said was the right way. Here's another way. Why don't you try this one? So they were disloyal to what God said. And because of that, they were trying to earn this honor and glory all on their own. Their sin. And we know what the result of their sin was. Their sin immediately made them ashamed of who they were and what they looked like. And they no longer felt free to come into the presence of God. And so they hid themselves. Ashamed, trying to cover themselves, no longer with the honor that God had given to them through his name, because they were no longer loyal to him. Their sin also, I think, dishonored God. In language we would use today, they lost face and God lost face. God was also dishonored. When the children of our families do something to dishonor us, we are also dishonored. And it's like that with God. So God is dishonored because of the sin of Adam and Eve. They brought shame on everyone. So what was God's reaction? He banished them. He threw them out of the garden. All of this honor and glory that God had given to them, because they decided to search for honor in their own way, now they're out of the garden, no longer part of the glory of God. They can't go to God in that same way. They don't have that same kind of intimacy, that relationship that they once had with him. That's one way that families, even today, and God at that time, that's the way he maintains his own glory and honor. The Bible tells us that God doesn't look on sin. He can't, be in the presence. He doesn't stand in the presence of sin. He somehow needs to separate himself because he is the holy God. And so because they are no longer holy because of their own decisions, now there is this separation. So God maintains his holiness. He maintains his honor. Unfortunately, when Adam and Eve sinned, they took all of humanity with them. Okay, here's another one. Shall I throw it on the floor? Mic drop. Sorry, group, you're going to have to sort out your microphones when you come back up. Look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. I don't have it up here. You'll have to look at it, or just remember it. You know this one. God created mankind in his own image. In his own image. That's from chapter 1. The creation is taking place. And when it came to humanity, God did something a little bit different than he did with all the rest. So there's an image of God within humanity. I believe that speaks to the holiness of God as well. Were Adam and Eve holy? Yes, they were. Because God created them such. But then when we come to Genesis chapter 5, verse 3, it says, when Adam had lived 130 years, he had a son in his own likeness. That son was Seth. So after sin, Adam and Eve can no longer claim that all of their children are totally in the image of God. The image is still there, but it's damaged now. And so there's this sinful part. We call it the sinful nature, original sin, or we could call it original shame. That is attached to every person now because of the sin of Adam and Eve. As descendants of Adam, we inherit their original shame. So that's the way we start life. It's kind of like sad news, isn't it? We already start our lives a little bit down, negative. But then we add to it ourselves. We add to our sin and our shame by our own decisions. And so for most people, that means that from the time we begin making our own decisions and we understand we are accountable for what we do, we're adding to our shame. We're adding to the dishonor that Adam and Eve brought to God, because we are also living sinful lives and doing things against his plan. Romans 3:23 says, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So we go back to the way of Adam and Eve. We try to build our own honor. We try to build our own selves up, maybe by boasting about how good we are, how great we've done things, sometimes by putting other people down through gossip or abuse. You know, and we think that somehow we will build our own self-esteem if we put other people down. Treat them as inferior, even at times resorting to violence and abuse. So God had a plan. Can you move it? Yeah, thank you. Jesus. Back one. Yep. So God had a plan. He wanted to restore the honor and the dignity to humanity that humanity we had lost through sin. So he began this covenant with Abraham. If you remember the covenant with Abraham, he said, I will make your name great. I'm going to give you a place. I'm going to give you land. I'll make you into a great nation. You're going to have children, so many. Those are the promises that God gave to Abraham. And he said, you will be blessed. You will be blessed, and through you, every nation, meaning every people on earth, will also be blessed. And so this was the plan that God initiated, and he said, I'm going to give you some laws, the Torah. I'm going to give you some rules, and if you obey these and you stay loyal to me, then through this process, you will be cleansed. Through the sacrificial process and all of the laws that God gave, he said, you can be cleansed, you can be restored to the honor that God had planned from the beginning. You will no longer be impure. And part of that covenant says, I will be your God, you will be my people. Just as it was in the Garden of Eden. There was God and there was his people. In perfect unity, in perfect relationship. And still the people gain their honor, not from themselves, but through God. Well, what we know as we read through the Bible is that Israel didn't always come through, in obedience to the law, to the Torah. And so part of God's plan then was to send Jesus. Jesus, eternally glorious with the Father, became a human so that he could save people. Think about the miracles that he did. When Jesus came in contact with people, the ones he really came for were those who needed some kind of help. They were what we would call marginalized people. These are the sick. These are the destitute. These are the poor. And through Jesus' work, he restores people to honor. He takes away the shame. Think about the woman who had this bleeding, you know, for 12 years. Think about the lepers who come. You know, these are outcast people from society. Nobody wants them to be around. Jesus makes them pure again. He makes them whole again so that they can come and be part of his body once again. They can become part of community. He restores to them the honor that had been taken away through disease or other things. Jesus loved them, and he brought them back into community. And what he's saying there is that all those things that society says is the right way to earn honor and glory, no, that's not it. It's through love and sacrifice, like Jesus gave us. I've asked at this time if Pastor Billy Marable would come and share some of his testimony with us.
Thank you, Dr. Lynn, for this opportunity. My name is Billy S. Marable, and I'm here to testify the Lord's transforming work in my life. A horrible life is what I had before, and it doesn't really have purpose. And I do things because I wanted to. Those are spending time with my peers and do worldly things, consuming drugs, selling drugs, illegal drugs, womanizing, gambling, gang fights, and so on. I thought that life was so fulfilling whenever I do such things. I did not bother to think about my future because I live for today, and the things that make me happy was more important to me. I was truly deceived by the devil during those times. December 2012, when Jesus came and saved me from the chains of this world, he used Dr. Bill Kwon, Dong Wan Kwon, an APNTS former professor, and Reverend Jackson Natividad, an alumnus here at APNTS, and many other leaders for me to understand the real meaning of life. And I have indeed learned many things about its purpose from them. These people impacted my life and helped me to have a deeper, wider, and clearer meaning than what I used to think before. I came to realize that life must be lived in the fullest and must not squander. That is why I went back to school to plan for my future and my family as well. I set goals and ways to achieve it through God's will. When I was about to enroll criminology course, I wanted to become a policeman. The Lord intervened during one chapel service here as well in APNTS. He clearly called me into full-time pastoral ministry, and I went to Evangelical Theological College of the Philippines instead, a Bible school that God is using to prepare me and equip me for the greater task that He entrusted me in the future. As I responded to His call, even though I never dreamt, no thought about it, His grace helped me to obey. One thing I know for sure, I do believe that the Lord is using my life as His instrument to reach out those people who were still lost and still deceived by the devil. I praise Jesus for His sustaining grace that I experience to thrive and finish my bachelor's degree in 5 years. Last 2018, I graduated. I also thank all the people who helped me through finances, encouragement, and prayers. They were a blessing to me. Throughout these years, there were numerous moments that I never forget because I do multiple jobs for me to succeed in life. In the morning, I am a tricycle driver. You know tricycle? Yeah, tricycle driver, which helps me to provide my daily needs. And at the same time, I was a student. And by night, I'm a pastor who leads several services in the church. After finishing college, I immediately succeeded the pastoral position of River of Life Community Fellowship, Church of the Nazarene, from Reverend Jackson Natividad, who was being called into national leadership position at this time as a child and women's advocate. This was also the first ever local church that I pastored for more than a year before God called me to APNTS to pursue Master of Divinity. Pastoring a local church is both tough and exciting. It taught me many things, especially in the aspects of administration and pastoral function. This experience made me realize that I have to upgrade my education if I'm desiring to serve the Lord more effectively. And studying master's degree in APNTS is the best choice to do. I was financially incapable to support my schooling in APNTS, but I believe that if it is God's will, it is also His will. And it is true. When out of nowhere, there were several people subsequently approached me that they were willing to support my studies. I believe that the Lord is the one who whispered in their hearts to help me because I never asked something from them or from these people. Currently, I just started studying and plan to finish my master's. I am aware that I will be facing many hardship in many aspects, but I also believe that the one who called me here is faithful and He will fulfill whatever He started in me. In God's will, after I finish my master's, I am desiring to plant at least one local church and transform a community or change, be a catalyst of transformation wherever Jesus leads me. And at the latter part of my life, I also dreamt to teach in the Bible school on the seminary. Yeah. As I end up my testimony, I pray that may I always be reminded by the Spirit of God that He has chosen me to become His hands and feet and reaching the lost and call them into a dynamic relationship with Jesus Christ that will bring them into the kingdom of God. Thank you everyone, and to God be all the glory.
The miracle of God taking one's life, transforming one's life into ways that bring honor to Him, bring honor back to God. Because when we live in that obedience, when we live in that way, obedient, loyal to Him, He gives us back the honor that we've been missing. The shame that we've felt, he takes it away. Hebrews 12, verse 2, says that Jesus humbled Himself and became obedient to death, even death on the cross. Jesus, who knew no sin, became sin for us. And they shamed Him publicly. They stripped off His clothes. They spit on Him. They beat Him. And then finally they hung Jesus on the cross naked, as if He were some kind of criminal. He did that for us to restore honor, to restore the shame that we have brought on ourselves, to take away the shame that we've brought on ourselves because of our sin. The rest of that verse goes on to say, Hebrews 12:2, therefore God exalted Him to the highest place. There is no name above the name of Jesus. And so we have that opportunity, and I know that we have already accepted that into our lives. That's why we are here, because we have accepted what Jesus has done for us. Our honor is restored because of what Jesus did. We are righteous because of what Jesus did. We are whole once again. We can stand naked and unashamed before our God because of what Jesus did. So that's where we are. God exchanges our filthiness, our impurities, and he takes them upon himself. He took them upon himself at the cross in order to give us bright, new, shining clothes to wear, pure clothes, a pure heart. There's a story, and I'm not going to give the whole story today, but there's a story called The Rag Man. Maybe some of you have heard that before. It's just a imagination story. But there's this man who goes around to people and he says, "I'll give you new rags if you give me your old rags." And so he goes up and he finds a woman who has this scarf wrapped around her, and she's just, her heart is broken and she's just crying into her scarf. And he takes off that scarf from her head and he puts a new beautiful scarf on her. He takes the old scarf and he puts it up to his own face, and he begins crying as if his own heart is breaking. And he goes and he finds another person who has a wound on their head, you know, with blood coming down the cheek. And he removes that bloody bandage and he puts a new hat on that person. And he puts the bloody bandage on his own head. And now he's feeling the pain of that wound, and blood is coming down his own cheek, and he's crying with a broken heart. This is Jesus. He says, "I will give you something brand new. I will remove all of the shame, all of those things that have been an embarrassment in your life, and I'm going to give you something new for it." It's like giving us totally new clothing. Well, that's where we are today. That's where we are today. This is a time of, as I said, this is a time of coming, calling to the Lord. I just want to come back to the words of Jeremiah. "Call unto me, and I will answer thee." I will answer you. I'm going to ask the worship team to come back up. They're going to lead us in a song, but